Okay, this is May 29th, 2004 at the Army Nurse Corps Convention in San Antonio, Texas, and I'm here with Wendy Weller. I'm Kara Buett. So we'll just start the interview with kind of where you grew up, where you're from, family background, that sort of thing.
Okay. My dad was in the Army when I was born at Fort Ord, which is in California, and I think I was 6 weeks old when he went to somewhere in Massachusetts. Uh-huh. And he was a World War II vet who got out and stayed in the Army, and then they switched him over to the Air Force. Mm-hmm. So he would get out, and there'd be the Korean conflict. They called him back in, uh-huh. at which time we were in Pennsylvania with my mom while he was in Korea. Uh-huh. And then he came home and got out, and then they called him up again. So as far as active duty with Dad, we were in Texas and Mississippi and Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So my uncle's an admirable, as we say, in the Navy. He went to Annapolis. My dad started out in the cavalry in 1934 or something like that, uh-huh. and he got a battlefield promotion in World War II. He went from, like, sergeant to lieutenant. Uh-huh. So we have the opposite ends of the spectrum. Uh-huh. Army-Navy game time, they sit there and scream at each other. Uh-huh. My dad calls him a ring knocker because he went to Annapolis and got the ring. So you could say strong military family. Uh-huh. And when I was in college, I was only 17 when I went through college, and I was always in a hurry. And the school that I went to was the University of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They had a trimester system, and there was five actual years, 10 semesters, mm-hmm. and it took you 5 years. But if you wanted to, you could go trimester and get through in 3 years, which is what I did. Uh-huh. Three and a half years or 3 1/3 uh-huh. trimesters. So I wasn't even 20 when I got out of
nursing school. And had a diploma at that. Or, yeah. I'm sorry, not diploma, but a degree program.
Bachelor's degree.
So,
mm-hmm. They had two years of liberal arts and 3 years of nursing mm-hmm. at that time. And then the only reason I joined the Army, I hadn't even thought about it, is one of my sorority sisters did. And she mm-hmm. said, listen, what a deal. They give you tuition and books, and they make you a private, whoop-de-doo. But that private money, you get a private salary and subsistence allowance, which pays for the dorm stuff. Mm-hmm. So she joined, and another sorority sister joined. There was three of us, and the only male in the class. Because mm-hmm. we told Denny, hey, this is a deal, guy. Plus, mm-hmm. my dad's trying to put all these kids through school. So for me, you know, and they were really, really worried I was too short, and my recruiter just said, tease up your hair. Okay, because you're a critical uh-huh. MOS. And that was it. We were actually PFCs at the University of Pittsburgh. Uh-huh. But I had also been in a couple of other groups, and I started or reactivated the Angel Flight, which was an Air Force ROTC associate thing. Mm-hmm. At those days, they didn't let you in the ROTC at college. Mm-hmm. It was male only. Mm-hmm. So we were in an auxiliary, and I was like the commander. So I was walking around campus in an Air Force uniform with the Forgeres doing drill, but I was actually in the Army, which was really kind of confusing, but that's the way it was. Okay. And I was a private till 6 months before I graduated, and then they took me out of the enlisted class and put me in as second lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And then I graduated in December, and the way state boards ran in those days, in some states they were only once a year, mm-hmm. so I couldn't take them until August. Mm-hmm. So I just went and worked as a graduate nurse, mm-hmm. and then when I passed state boards in August, I was ready to go down for medical field service school in September. Mm-hmm. And because I had been in all that time, by the time I got down to Fort Sam, they promoted me to first lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that because, first of all, I didn't know what I was doing anyway, and number two, well, I had to be the platoon leader, and that means when you walk backwards, to make them turn right, you usually say column right, but when you walk backwards, it has to be the opposite. Mm-hmm. So I screwed that up. I had them walking totally into another group. Of course, the MSCs used to do that for fun, so we were okay with that. So I ended up being the platoon leader, uh-huh. and went to Walter Wonderful, which is Walter Reed, and I was in a medical unit and neurology. Uh-huh. And then I was there for 4 months, and then I got assigned to Vietnam and ended up there going over Tet. We had no travel orders. They parked us at some place where if you're a girl, you have like three heads. They don't know what to do with you. So we got hops with pilots. Me being the Air Force brat, I just went to an officer's club and found a pilot who knew somebody, and he gave us these little plane rides to these different hospitals, and we finally got to where we were supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then I got my assignment, and I told the chief nurse I wanted to go somewhere somewhere where it was cooler. That was a joke.
Uh-huh.
So she put me up in I-Corps, which was up north by the DMZ.
Uh-huh. And had you always wanted to be a nurse, or when did you decide you wanted to do that?
In those days, in the 60s, you were either a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher.
Mm-hmm. And none of the other options appealed to you? Or
Some of the girls were going to go ahead and do be rocket scientists and doctors and stuff like that. But in those days, most of us just figured we were going to get married.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I just figured nursing was interesting.
Uh-huh.
You know, I guess my brother had been badly burned when he was like 2 years old. And I remember him being at Valley Forge Army Hospital covered with bandages and, mm-hmm. you know, septic all the time. So maybe I just gravitated towards hospitals.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was in Future Nurses of America. I mean, I knew I was going to be a nurse.
Uh-huh.
And I just figured if I could get all this extra support from the Army, and I figured in those days you had to volunteer for Vietnam, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just figured, well, you know, if I'm going to go in, I might as well do the most good while I could.
Uh-huh.
So that's basically, you know,
uh-huh.
and when I, so you're only, I think we had to give back 3 years,
mm-hmm.
but I kept extending.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up in 13 active, and then they put me in the reserve.
Uh-huh. And do you remember talking to a recruiter at all before you, or when you went to join up?
Yeah, I remember talking to the recruiter. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, the recruiter that signed me up in Pittsburgh is right here in San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
Because I met her about 4 years ago. We were both working at the same hospital.
Uh-huh. Is that one of the Crist twins?
No.
No.
This one,
okay.
Somebody else.
Somebody else. Okay. I met two recruiters who were in Pennsylvania or in mm-hmm. the area.
Oh, can you imagine my shock when I met this lady and uh-huh. I said, "What is your name?" And I said, "Were you ever an Army recruiter in Pittsburgh?" I said, "You were my recruiter."
Uh-huh.
Look where we both ended up, the VA. Well, that's a joke. All uh-huh. the Army nurses end up at the VA hospital
uh-huh.
when you retire from either going to teaching or end up there.
Uh-huh.
And that's where she was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What kinds of things did she tell you about the nurse corps?
She didn't tell me anything about it. I just walked in and said, "I'm going to join."
Oh,
where's the
she didn't have to do a lot of persuasion.
No. Oh, no. No, heavens, no. I've already been as a military brat,
uh-huh.
you know, so she didn't have to convince me at all.
Uh-huh.
We just all kind of joined. In fact, my dad got his Air Force uniform and came over from the Valley Forge area and swore us in.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no. I don't know. I didn't even know why I didn't. I didn't think of it before because they didn't have ROTC,
uh-huh.
and I didn't know there was a special program for nurses.
Uh-huh.
But this one sorority sister of mine, and we have to laugh because she's Jewish, and she's always got an angle with money. She really does. And she's the one that got this deal. She says, "Hey, I found out how we can get our last year and a half free,"
uh-huh.
practically.
uh-huh.
And she turned out going to Fort Benning before she went over, and she got married a lieutenant there, and he got orders, and they weren't going to let her go, so she went to LBJ.
Mm-hmm.
She got an appointment with the Prez and said, "My husband's going, and I want to go." So they went at the same time. And I got a letter from her last year with a little thing about how he got shot over there, and he was coming in, he got shot down trying to come in when he was wounded to begin with,
uh-huh.
and they're still married.
Huh.
So that's
wow.
a small world. But most of the Army nurses were younger. Now, the very few older nurses they had were probably like majors and maybe one or two lieutenant colonels.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to see if one of them, and that's why I have my little list. I'm looking for people, mm-hmm. you know, that or mm-hmm. might be still alive. I don't know. They may not be. They're 20 years older than, 15 years older than me at the
uh-huh.
time. But anyway, that's when I got to Vietnam, and then when I came back, I went to some little place near home called Fort Lee,
mm-hmm.
and then they were advertising for somebody with experience to go to this research center outside Washington,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very small little hospital, and they wanted somebody new that shock and trauma and could manage things and that, and I went there, and then I went to Hawaii, and then I went to Georgia, Fort Gordon, and then I went to Massachusetts,
mm-hmm.
and then I got out
mm-hmm.
and came here.
Uh-huh. And then, so your first long-term, first year assignment, I guess you had a few months before you went
right,
to Vietnam.
First year assignment was
real
Vietnam.
Year assignment. Had mm-hmm. you thought about the war before, or given that much thought, really?
I never watched TV. Well, let me take that back. Depending on what shift I was working, I never
uh-huh.
watched the news.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even watch the news until maybe 4 years ago. First of all, don't get me started on the press, but
uh-huh.
The whole time I was in Vietnam, my parents were sending, or my mother was sending me clippings. And I'm sitting there going, but I'm here. That didn't happen. What is all this crapola? And my dad's the same way. I just hate the press. I mean, they take one little thing, magnify it, and all these people that are against the war, they have absolutely no idea what is going on. My nephew's over there now. Mm-hmm. And you never hear anything positive. Like, when I was in Vietnam, we took in men, women, and children, and we took in anybody. They came in, we looked at what was wrong with them, and that's the unit they went on in my hospital. If they turned out to be the enemy, we just restrained them. We didn't have, on my unit, on my hospital, we didn't have a PO ward, POW ward. Some of them they did. Mm-hmm. But in our hospital, they gave me neurosurgery, eye, ear, nose, throat, GU, and burns. And never done surgery in my life. Before I came on active duty, I had done, gallbladders, you know, picky little stuff in a med-surg hospital, mostly medical stuff. Mm-hmm. And then at Walter Reed, it had been neurological and medical. Mm-hmm. So they put me on the surgical specialty ward. The head nurse left, and because I had rank, they made me the head nurse. Mm-hmm. So we had to learn fast, mm-hmm. really, really fast. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did the whole year that I was there, and that was the unit nobody wanted to work on because it was real, you know, nasty, you know, just really gross injuries. Well, everything was gross injuries, but, you know, this is your brain and your face and burns and all that. So basically, it wasn't something I really volunteered for. They just said, you're going to do it, and I said, okay, I don't know how to do this. I guess I'm going to learn. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as being a war, my dad was in the military. I've been on military bases. And in those days, they pretty much protected the women. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had no idea that you know, you'd go out to the outdoors latrine and, you know, bullets were going to go by your head. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of casualties from the Marines because they would, when we had outdoor showers, they would fly over in their little helicopters and get caught in the electrical lines trying to look at the nurses. And they fry up there. I said, who are these crazy people? Marine helicopter pilots. You get used to them. I said, okay. A lot of insanity like that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what somebody's mother was told when these people died. You know. Yeah. But, no, I never listened to the nightly news or anything. Uh-huh. There was too much going on in the 60s to need to look at the nightly news. You probably never heard of Abbie Hoffman, but he was this big radical guy. Mm-hmm. He actually came to our campus. Simon and Garfunkel sang at our homecoming thing. Mm-hmm. I remember they came out on the stage. I thought they were stagehands. You know, and then they started singing. Mm-hmm. Abbie Hoffman was this radical. He came to the campus. That was when Martin Luther King was shot. Mm-hmm. At 68, I believe it was, and they had all the rioting. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went through the turbulent time. Oh, we had the bus when they did the march to Selma. Mm-hmm. A lot of the sororities and fraternities and different groups had a bus, and you could get on the bus, and a bunch of us did, and we went down to Selma. Uh-huh. And helped with the march. Uh-huh. And then they took us back.
Selma march.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They had a bus, and a bunch of us, hey, you want to go? I said, yeah, I got 2 days, no classes, let's go. Uh-huh. So we did. Uh-huh. That was the crazy 60s.
Yeah.
Gosh, I think we slept on the bus. Uh-huh. And we got down there, and we just locked arms and marched. Mm-hmm. And they came out with the fire hoses, and they said, okay, we don't want anybody to get hurt. We were way back in the back. They just turned around, and we got back on the bus and went back up there. Mm-hmm. We didn't see a whole lot.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You know, didn't get to see a whole lot, mm-hmm. but a bunch of us were always going, see, I took a stand. Whenever I have a black person screaming in my face about bad whitey, and I go, hey, where were you at Selma? Huh? Huh? I was in the Selma march, marching for you. And then they shut up. This is radical people, you know. But no, I didn't know too much about the war. Mm-hmm. I didn't watch TV. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I felt reasonably safe or reasonably scared or whatever. It's just that I'm a nurse, and if there's one group of people that need nurses, this is it. Uh-huh. And like I said, the hospital that I went to, we did men, women, children. They'd bring them in. We'd fix them up. If we had to put litters on the floor, we did. Uh-huh. And there was no newsmen walking around there seeing us taking care of all these sick people. Uh-huh. You know, they were just there filming, you know, kind of like this prison thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I said, what's the big deal? Uh-huh. They were getting information from them. They got a couple of Fruit Loops that were obviously bored and untrained and a little kinky, to say the least. You know, what's the president apologizing for? It's called interrogation tactics that a couple of people were real bored on the night shift and did a bunch of weird stuff. But, I mean, it's not like they're killing people and cutting off arms and legs. But the press is making a really big deal about it. Mm-hmm. And my nephew's over there, and somebody says, well, you know, I don't want to send him anything. I said, well, that's fine. My nephew's over there. Now I can't have a flak jacket and two meals a day. Mm-hmm. It's all in the perspective. Mm-hmm. And I keep telling him, there's a lot of stuff going around from military people that have come back. And what's actually going on, you never hear the good things. Like, there's 200% more electricity than there was before the war. There's a lot more. There's a bunch of fact sheets going around. And if the press really wanted to, they could focus on that. Mm-hmm. But they're doing kind of like what they did in the Vietnam days. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that's what sells headlines. For my money, Dan Rather's the one that ought to be shot, because they do things to people for information, but you don't take pictures and show it. He's the one that put the pictures on. Mm-hmm. But it's not Geneva Convention anyway, because these people aren't POWs. They're terrorists. Really, you're just like the Viet Cong. Those people were terrorists. Now, the NVA, they were trained cadre. Mm-hmm. They were actually professional soldiers, but these little VC guys, mm-hmm. you know. But as far as being, I don't think I was really scared until I was in the helicopter crash. That made an impression.
And when was this?
Oh, gosh. Sometime in 69, one of my corpsmen had wanted to go dust off, and I wrote up a real nice thing for him, and he got accepted, so he transferred over to do the dust off medevac. Mm-hmm. And the only way we could get out of the compound was sneak out. Sometimes they would let you have some guards and you could go to downtown Da Nang, but not often. Mm-hmm. We were on a peninsula outside of Da Nang. Mm-hmm. It was quite a ways to get there. They had a Navy bus, but I never got on there unless when I was there with a group of people. Mm-hmm. Because there were Vietnamese civilians on there, and they'd slash your pockets and off with your money. These little kids, the little slicky guys, they'd slash your pockets and you wouldn't even know it. Mm-hmm. So we didn't do that too often, and actually they didn't want us going anywhere. We had one day off a week. Mm-hmm. So people are people. We were young and crazy. The best way to get off the compound was to go up in a helicopter. Mm-hmm. And boy, being a girl, you could get a helicopter ride anytime. 500 women in country with 500,000 men. Oh, man. You know, you could have track marks on your face, and they'd say, would you like a ride in a helicopter? Sure, where are we going? Uh-huh. So we used to go up a lot, and we would go to parties at night where we weren't supposed to be out of the compound. Uh-huh. Sometimes we'd sneak out in the back of a deuce and a half with the Marines and get to see some of the tourist sites in downtown Da Nang, uh-huh. where we weren't supposed to be. But the Marines were with us, and the MPs usually didn't bother us if they saw we had Marines with us. You uh-huh. know, if they caught you walking around by yourself, oh, they're going to pick you up and take you back, but you're not really going to get in trouble, uh-huh. you know. So when he said, yeah, you want to ride? And I said, oh, yeah, where are you going? Well, I was at the 95th Evac, which was on a peninsula outside Da Nang, mm-hmm. and they were going up to, I think it was Quang Tri, mm-hmm. to get some casualties and bring them down. Well, we were coming back. I have no idea where we were. Somebody got lucky with their little, what is that thing? It's not an RPG. It's the little thing, I don't know my weapons, but it's the thing that comes out like a little rocket launcher thing. Anyway, they hit our main rotor. Uh-huh. And you can't fly a helicopter without a rotor, uh-huh. you know. So we started going down, and the pilot was really good. He crashed us in a bunch of vegetation, like double canopy maybe. Uh-huh. You've heard of triple and single canopy, uh-huh. you know, the layers of brush. Uh-huh. So we were up there. And, of course, those days I weighed about 100 pounds, soaking wet. I had a beetle haircut, no makeup. And I was, when you rode with the dust-off guys, and most of the other guys, too, they would stick you behind the gunner. Uh-huh. So, and, you know, there was no doors because they had the gun there and they had to get casualties in and out. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of hang on to the gunner, you know, and peek out. You know, say, they didn't have a seatbelt on. And what happened is when we crashed, I was wedged in the door with the gunner and the gun. Uh-huh. And so these Green Berets and some Marines were down there, and the Green Berets rappelled up. And they got the pilot and the co-pilot. They got the two casualties. Then they were trying to get us out of the doorway. So they got the gunner, and they got the dust of the medic, my medic, and they got the gun. And I was the last one, and the sergeant's picking me up. And he turns me around, you know, and he's saying to somebody, man, look at these shrimps they're drafting. And just as he said that, he whipped me around, and I think he saw the caduceus first. Mm-hmm. Then he saw the N, so uh-huh. that's nurse. Uh-huh. And, of course, I'm so little, it didn't register. And then all of a sudden, he goes, it's a, and I knew he was going to say woman, and I put my hand over his mouth, and I said, you don't really want to say that out loud, do you? And he goes, oh, no. Now he's sweating because I'm a liability. Uh-huh. You're like a poker chip if you get captured. I mean, that's, oh, man, they'd get more mileage out of that, you know, female captive. And he was really worried. So they had to get us all down, and we were getting burn camps, burn packs out for pilot, co-pilot. And they had to try to get another chopper in to get us out. And, of course, it was a hot LZ, so we weren't going anywhere. So they finally called in another chopper. We must have been there 4 or 5 hours. And I thought, oh, God, I'm going to get an Article 15. If I don't get back, I'm going to get caught, you know, and they're going to send me home. My father's going to kill me. That's all. I wasn't worried about getting killed, because once you get over in a situation like that, most of us do this mind thing. It's got your name on, it's going to get you. Mm-hmm. Now, there are people that can't cope. They're hiding in the bunker all the time, walking around with 15 pounds of it. That is not going to help you. So most of us are like, if you get killed, you're going to get killed. And that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. So I was more worried with getting the burn packs on these guys and looking at the guy with the bad wound, blah, 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 blah. They had a couple wounded from the firefight. So me and the medic are taking care of them, and my corpsman. Because you don't have time to think. That's one thing you do with your mind. You don't worry about what's going on. And that's why a lot of people have PTSD, because you put it in a little compartment, you lock it up. And then years later, when you're not expecting it, the stuff that you stuffed all those years comes out, you know, and there it is. But we just did our job. We didn't have time to worry about, you know, freaking out and all that kind of stuff. So we got back to the hospital. Oh, I know what it was, Hamburger Hill. That's what it was. That was the day of Hamburger Hill, and we were getting a lot of casualties. Mm-hmm. So when we landed, people were in a big hurry. You know, they were dragging people off. So my corpsman, he was going to go back over. They were going to take him back to where he was supposed to go. So I just got out, and I started holding one of the litter ends and just ran in. Nobody really noticed because it was busy. And I'm going, oh, boy, am I lucky. So about 5 or 6 hours later, one of the orthopods came over, and he says, hey, you need a break? He says, what are you limping for? I said, come here, George. I want you to look at my knee. And I told him what I did. I said, I was wedged in the door with the gun. And he goes, well, does anything else hurt? And I said, well, my neck kind of hurts, you know, kind of like, can you get whiplash? He's laughing at me. He says, I think you really got jarred in there, you know. My neck hurt, my shoulder hurt, my knee hurt. And the knee, he said, you know, if we were stateside, you know, we probably have to operate. And he said, I said, hey, get an ACE, throw it on there. I do not want an Article 15. I'm probably going to get in trouble as it is. After this is over, they're going to want to know where I was 4 hours ago, you know, because when you have mass casualties, you call everybody over. So I just limped around. Mm-hmm. I didn't say anything about it. And then years later, I was moving furniture on one of the wards one night, and the thing went out. And it really hurt, and they said, oh, you got a meniscal tear, and, you know, we can go in, and, but sometimes it's safer not to. So on my ETS physical, I've got down there a meniscal tear from moving furniture. I thought, oh, man, they're going to get me, you know. But, I mean, nothing bothered me until I really started getting sick in my 50s, and then, you know, everything kind of hurt. Mm-hmm. But we had a lot of boring days when it was just the same old thing. And then we had the days with the mass cows. And usually if you work days, it was 12-hour shift. You got off at 7 and tried to go to bed by 10 because you had to get up at 6. But sometimes when Charlie started hitting, they had more casualties coming at night. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, when I came back from Vietnam, I don't sleep at night. I haven't slept at night since 1969. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to one of the guys that at the VA, and he said, well, there's actually a physiological process there where it resets your wake and sleep cycles. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting. Mm-hmm. So my coping mechanism is I just always worked nights or evenings. Mm-hmm. You know, and even though I'm retired now, I'm still up till 3 in the morning. It's just like that's when I go to bed. Mm-hmm. 10:30 at night, I'm, you know, wide awake. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people. In fact, one of the other people I worked with at the VA, we worked together for 11 years on the night shift. Mm-hmm. He was a Vietnam veteran, too. He'd been a medic in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting. We worked psych. Mm-hmm. And they called us Aunt Wendy and Uncle Normie. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have trouble with the drug dealers unless they were really, really high or trying to be a badass. But most of the time, a lot of the patients would say, well, they're vets too. We have no trouble with them. Mm-hmm. We'd say, this is the way it's going to be. It's like reparenting, mm-hmm. you know. Now, the crazy people don't know what's going on until you get them medicated and calm down. But mm-hmm. these dope addicts, there's a lot of dope addicts, criminals in the VA that are in there to hide from the law. And I was starting to talk like a prison matron, and probably still do. You have to walk the walk and talk the talk, because, I mean, I'm 4'9". Look at me. Do I look like I'm going to beat these guys up? No, it's a duel of wits. So we used to have these guys come out at nights, and nobody could sleep, and yada, yada. And we'd say, okay. And we didn't give them a lot of drugs, and they knew they weren't going to get them from us because we had limits. But I think it helped when I had left the VA to teach, and then I came back, ICU all the way. I was a critical care instructor. And then when I started getting sicker is when they moved me to psych, because there's a lot of things I couldn't do, and I thought, oh, I'm going to have to retire. You know, but it turned out that I liked it in a way, because a lot of these guys really needed to be reparented. You know, I don't think they had strong parenting to begin with. They had, like, very weak personalities, and then they went to Vietnam, a lot of them, and that forget it. So, you know, in that way, I liked that. In a lot of ways, I didn't. With the drug dealers, you'd better do this or I'm going to kill you. I used to say, you're going to kill me? Yeah, I'm going to kill you. I said, okay, well, you better watch out. Why? Because I weigh more than you do, and if you kill me, I'll probably fall on you and crush you. And most of them would either laugh, you know. Of course, they didn't see my knees shaking under my dress. But, in fact, they wouldn't let me off the night shift, because we could... We're just that kind of can-do people, you know, and, hey, this is the job, we're going to do it. We used to get really angry about these whiny young people. Oh, God, I didn't have my break. I didn't have my break every hour. I'm going, oh, my God, you know, talk about a generation gap. Because we didn't get any. Well, there was times in Vietnam we went for 2 or 3 days. There was other times when there wasn't that much going on. And that's another thing you'll never see in the paper, how we used to take the Vietnamese from the villages that had elective things to be done, and we'd operate on them if there was, if, you know, there was nothing, no big mass cows or something. And we'd hide people. I used to hide, I had this little kid I hid in my room. Every time mass cows came in, I'd hide him in my little hooch until we moved the mass cows out, because I didn't want him to go to a civilian hospital because he was invaluable. He got shot on Monkey Mountain by the VC, and he spoke English. And when we had mass cows come in, we could take him down to receiving, or if when the new admissions came to our little unit, he'd go, VC, Laotian, NVA, invaluable. Because when they come in like that and they're, you know, shot up in the head, we don't always know who's who. Because half the time, you know, we get them, they don't even have clothes. And I found out years later, I was at a big convention and I met a doctor that I worked with. And I found out that he got that kid on the German hospital ship. We used to go down once a week. I speak or spoke fractured French. And the Germans didn't speak a lot of English, but they spoke French. So he would take me along. God only knows what we lost in the translation. But we'd make grand rounds down there. Well, he smuggled that kid. I thought the kid had been shipped to one of the civilian hospitals. He smuggled that kid onto the German hospital ship. And they smuggled him to Germany. And he's an architect. He'd been shot in the back and had some different problems. We'd hide him all the time. Absolutely invaluable. I also started a PT program. You know, when you get, when you have a stroke on one side, you have weakness on the other. You know, a lot of these little kids or people, they have gunshot wounds or frags on one side, so they have like a stroke-like syndrome. So what we did is, order to mix our IVs. We didn't have these little, nowadays you get a big IV, and then when they want to give you special medicine, they have this little piggyback, and they plug it in and give it to you, like you might have antibiotics four times a day or something. Well, we didn't have that much luxury. What we used to do was mix the penicillin and the chloramycetin in little bottles, and then we'd inject it in the big bottle and run it in over 12 hours. So for physical therapy, and to get this done, I lined all the bottles up. And we had to, there's nothing like it is now where they have a pharmacist that fixes everything. We had all the little bottles, and I put the right kind of solvent in there. Then mamas and kids, everybody shakes. And that was our physical therapy. Of course, some of them kept dropping it, so we'd like tape their hand. And everybody'd sit there and shake up the medicine, you know, and then we'd put it in the bottles. And we had them help us clean the unit. We were in, the Quonset huts had concrete floors. And somebody knew somebody in the Air Force, and somehow we got tiles. So everybody got together and tiled the floor. Patients, kids, you know. If we had little kids there, we only had four cribs. Mm-hmm. But even if we had a little baby in a crib, Mama-san was either sleeping under the crib or in the crib with the kid, because mm-hmm. they would help, you know, take care of them. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, okay, we're taking care of your kid or your father. They would just help us with the unit. Mm-hmm. So it was a very interesting camaraderie, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Especially when a VC or an MVA or a Laotian or somebody would come in, the patients would come and tell us, he VC, you know, but they would tell us real quietly because, yeah. you know, that guy might like get loose and kill him. Yeah. So it was a very, we got to know the Vietnamese people from working with them, mm-hmm. and we maybe had a less adversarial type relationship in that we didn't see them all the time trying to kill us. Mm-hmm. But the local Mama-san that ran the PX was really the local drug dealer. Mm-hmm. So when she's selling people drugs, they're no good in guard duty. So you can win the war a different way, kind of a deal.
Yeah.
We had a Korean restaurant owner who had a closed hand injury, and they brought him to the Army hospital, and we operated on him, and he thanked us by inviting us all to his restaurant. It was a French restaurant. Mm-hmm. But we could go, but we had to be sure that everything was cooked and we couldn't have ice cubes in the drinks or anything like that, you know, mm-hmm. for because of maybe dysentery and everything. We met, my nursing assistant, Mr. Thapp, he had been a school teacher and he was my interpreter. And guess which two languages he spoke? Vietnamese and French. Mm-hmm. Very little English. I said, now this is the Army. They sent all of us over there. I didn't know anything about Vietnam. They didn't give us any phrases. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure that we learned nasty words, like telling somebody to urinate, and you probably tell them to take a piss, mm-hmm. or, you know. Now, I learned a phrase, and every time I said it, those little kids would eat their food, and a lot of times they just wanted candy, but boy, you'd say this, and they'd eat. Finally, I asked one of my corpsmen one day, I said, what does that mean? He says, oh, you're telling them they better eat or you're going to cut their throat. Had no idea, you know, because we were learning the bad words, uh-huh. but we learned what worked, essentially.
Yeah.
So I have absolutely no idea sometimes what we were telling people, and I was only 22. I said maybe I ought to start finding this out. Mm-hmm. It was a very good experience working with these corpsmen, mm-hmm. who were from all walks of life, but we taught them kind of like advanced physiology and medicine, and we learned things from that. And this was quite different from the Navy, because I've talked to Navy hospital corpsmen that'll tell you that they were basically doing the work and the nurses were like the supervisors. Mm-hmm. And I think the Army was a lot different that way, because mm-hmm. you were kind of just, you know, thrown into it. Mm-hmm. I remember when I went to R&R in Hong Kong, hadn't seen a shopping center in 9 months. An American female, can you believe it? And boy, this is going to be dangerous right by everything I see. When I got to the hotel and I checked in, by this time I was a captain, I got my room at the Hilton and I filled up that bathtub with bubble bath. Mm-hmm. And I was going to just, I would just jump in and soak. And then somebody knocked at the door. And it was this really beautiful Oriental girl, and she, I'm looking for Captain Weller. I said, that's me. Oh. She says, so sorry. She left. I thought, I don't know what that was. So I went to get back in the bathtub, and I was in the bathtub. And the door knocked, and I said, oh, Jesus, what is this? You know, so I get up and I open the door, and this is a guy from Switzerland or Holland or someplace. Hi, I am your escort for the week. And I looked at this guy. I said, does this come with the hotel? He says, well, we volunteer, but, you know, you pay us extra. I said, sir, I have been surrounded for men, nothing but men, for 9 months. I don't want to see any guys while I'm in Hong Kong. I said, I'm sorry. I shut the door, and I said, what is this? So they had this little, and I've still got it, it's a little leather-bound book about the Hong Kong Hilton. Mm-hmm. I took it in with me to the bathtub, and I said, what's an escort service? Mm-hmm. And I'm going, man, I'm telling you, I learned a lot over there. Mm-hmm. I still tell that story. That was so funny. I've been around guys. I don't want to see any men, for heaven's sakes, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I found out something very interesting when I got out of the bathtub. It's like, oh, I'm finally clean. I haven't had a bath in 9 months. My arms were still brown. And I said, what is this? So I got... I I wanted to get back in that bathtub. So I filled it up again with hot water, and I got out, and I realized my arms were brown from here to my fingertips. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, well, it must be the sun. Mm-hmm. But my face wasn't that brown, and I thought, what is this? Finally dawned on me. We had 55-gallon trash cans. Are you familiar with a substance called betadine?
Mm-hmm. You know, kind of that yellowish, orangish.
Right. Well, it's actually brown, and then when you pour the water in, it foams up. It's an iodine derivative. Uh-huh. Well, we would take those things, and, you know, we didn't really have a lot of plumbing. Mm-hmm. Well, we would take a bedpan and a brush, and every time you used it, they just put everything in there and scrubbed. Mm-hmm. That was betadine, uh-huh. And it was stained there for I think it took a year for it to go away. Uh-huh. That was really funny. I was going, man, look at this tan. One tan, one dirt. Wasn't tan, it wasn't dirt. Uh-huh. But I also realized that maybe I shouldn't have gone to Hong Kong because there was more Oriental people. Mm-hmm. I didn't really realize the difference until we had a deal. We got an R&R, but we got a leave. We got a week leave, the nurses did. Mm-hmm. And I went to Australia. Uh-huh. And December is their, it's Christmas time, but it's their summer. Mm-hmm. And it's like, white people. You know? My God, there's actually, well, I think I was so used to being around Orientals all the time and being a minority. Mm-hmm. It was a real shock. Mm-hmm. It was a real, and that's when I found out, when you're walking around town and you go up to the limeade stand or the lemonade stand and you drink this limeade because you're hot, and then you get hotter, so you drink some more. And finally, I went up to this one guy and I said, do you just have water? I'll pay for the water. He said, what's wrong? I said, well, this is my third glass of limeade. Man, I'm just, well, they mixed it with gin. Because an aid to them, I didn't know. Here I'm walking around in the sun drinking gin, and I can't drink that. It makes my face red. That was real interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Then they had MACV tours that were sponsored, and I thought, well, I'm going to try something different. So I went to a ranch for 3 days, mm-hmm. and the family takes you in, like a dude ranch or something, mm-hmm. and you get to ride the horse and shear the sheep and look at the kangaroos, mm-hmm. and all that. And the only trouble was I had a hard time walking after that because I hadn't been on a horse in a long time. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of interesting. And then I took all the tours. And, of course, I was the only girl, always the only girl on the bus. Mm-hmm. They went to, all these different places. And then they wanted to drop me off. And I said, is the tour over? And the tour guide says, well, it's going. There's one more place, but we don't know if. I said, what is it? Well, it's just a cabaret. I said, well, I'm 22, you know. I think I was 23 by that time. No, I wasn't 23 yet. I can't remember. Yeah, I think I just turned 23. I said, yeah, well, I can go. Well, there was a couple of senior colonels on the bus, and I turned around and I said, I can go, can I? Like I'm talking to my father. And he goes, I'll tell you what, if there's anything that you shouldn't see, I'll cover your eyes. And I said, that's what they did the whole time in those officers' club when the girls would come, the Filipino girls. Just when it got interesting, they'd cover my eyes. You know, they wanted to protect us. Mm-hmm. Did anybody ever tell you about the little ping pong balls that she kneels down on the stage and sucks them up inside and then spits them out? Oh, you have to bend. Talk about control. First time I saw that, these guys are going crazy. I was sitting there with another nurse, and I'm watching this, and I'm going, I wonder what muscles she's using to do that. And then somebody else said something. And these guys are just going nuts, you know. And then this guy turned around and he says, I don't think you should be here. And I said, I'll tell you what. If you idiots are dumb enough to pick up those ping pong balls when they come shooting out and not washing your hands, you're the ones that don't block. I couldn't believe it.
And you saw these in clubs?
Oh, yeah. They come to the officers' clubs. You know, the showgirls. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were always, there was the younger ones, they were always trying to get us through. I said, I'm here. I'm in a war zone. I want to get educated. I'm going to see everything. Most of the time they blocked my view and I couldn't see. Uh-huh. They had some, but anyway, here we are in Australia. And I said, I'm going to see. It was no big deal. I mean, it's just a bunch of girls in Las Vegas type clothes dancing, mm-hmm. you know. And I didn't think it was a big deal. And then at the end of the show, I did notice that it was canned music, and they weren't really singing with a microphone. But I mean, you know, uh-huh. so you know, some dive. I figured, you know. So afterwards, one of the showgirls came over to the table, and one of the guys said hi, and the showgirl goes, "Well, guys, what did you think?" And I looked and I said, oh, they're female impersonators. Then I got real, and I was staring. And I was really staring because I couldn't figure out how they got all that, you know, in those outfits. It didn't bother me at all. In fact, I took a very clinical interest in that. And then the guy came down, he says, well, you know, he says, I'm getting my female injections. And he pulls down and says, see, I've got boobies now. I said, that's very interesting. This was before they had silicone to a big extent. And I was saying, now, what kind of hormones are you taking? And he was telling me, and he was going to go to Sweden and have a sex change operation. And these guys were in a dither, and I thought it was very interesting. I know I never talked to a transvestite that was fixing to be a girl before.
Uh-huh.
But they used to try to shelter us from all that stuff, and it really didn't work. Uh-huh. Like the magazines they had in the PX.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go in there looking for 17 or, you know, Red Book or something, you know, and these guys are just all there with these really gross porno mags. And of course, I'd walk up, and I'm so short, most of them just ignored me. Then usually somebody see the captain's bars. All these magazines would shut like cards, you know. Hi, ma'am. Hi, ma'am. Hi, ma'am. One guy said, were you looking for that? I said, yeah. Can you get that little magazine? Yes, ma'am. Okay. And I know they were waiting for me to walk away, but I used to think it was really funny. Uh-huh. So when I finally walk away, they'll be opening their magazines again. Actually, when we flew to Australia, the Australian people came on the plane and took away everybody's Playboy. They search the males' carry-on because they have their own porn or something. And so some guy behind me says, hey, you put this in your suitcase. I said, why? He says, they're not going to ask you to look in your suitcase. I said, okay, so I'll put it in there, my little carry-on. That's what they were looking for. And then they got off the plane. I said, am I going to get trouble? He says, no, give it back. Uh-huh. They also sprayed us before we got off the plane in Australia. I thought that was insulting.
What kind of, like a delousing kind of spray?
I think it was lice, some kind of bug stuff.
Hmm.
They sprayed the whole plane. And I said, okay, when we all come down with interstitial pneumonitis, and guess what? A lot of people did. Well, that's because we used to spray at night.
Uh-huh.
We had the semi-permanent structures that, you know, there was no, what do you call it? What do you call the stuff that you put over framing? What's the word for it? That board that you nail up, plaster board, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. They just left everything exposed. So the roaches usually came out around sundown.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come up down the compound and spray outside for mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody would be inside spraying. And, you know, a lot of us have lung disease now. I have a feeling, since I'm not a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And, they also proved, I think now the latest is that Agent Orange exposure is supposed to give you the fibrosis or interstitial pneumonitis or something.
Mm-hmm.
One of these days. Well, you know, it was in the water because they had sprayed so much. Then the monsoons came, and it all just soaked down in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it was in the water, and I'm sure it was in any vegetables or anything that we ate there that was grown there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have several things related to Agent Orange.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do.
Uh-huh.
The Australians were the first to find out there was a direct link with Agent Orange exposure to diabetes.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know if you knew that. There's a big explosion right now of type 2 diabetes.
Uh-huh.
But if you're a Vietnam veteran and you come down with diabetes, then you go file a claim and they will service connect you for that.
Uh-huh.
And if you have to take medicine or insulin or if you have the cholesterol, the high blood pressure, any of the complications of diabetes, then they give you more service connection.
Uh-huh.
And I think that a lot of the Hispanics we have here in town, it's in their genes. That's a proven thing.
Uh-huh.
But now they're all getting money from the government if they get diabetes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you ever have any of the fertility problems that some women have had?
I have the faintest idea because I never got married. But I never had a regular period,
uh-huh.
ever. I would have 3 periods a year,
uh-huh.
maybe. And the only time, I've had a lot of autoimmune problems. My thyroid went, I started getting all this weight, nobody could figure out why. That was because they have better tests now than they did in those days. I was having all kinds of funny things. I was falling a lot. I had swelling of the brain that put pressure on my optic nerve, and I was losing my vision. All these autoimmune things. And then later, they decided most of it was due from Agent Orange, but the the VA only service connects you for certain ones. Mm-hmm. But by that time, I had so many things wrong. Mm-hmm. Then I got immediate dysentery. Our hospital had the highest morbidity rate in 1969. That's not deaths. That's incidence of sickness. Mm-hmm. And there was a somebody infected our water supply, mm-hmm. and everybody had amoebic dysentery. Mm-hmm. We all had basins under our little cots at night. You just take the basin out and sit because you never knew when it was going to come. And mine went up to my liver, and they set up housekeeping in the reservoir, so they had to drain my liver. So for like 4 or 5 years, I had elevated liver enzymes. But now I'm older, and I'm having to take medicines for other things that are excreted through the liver, and now my liver enzymes are going up again. So I never finished in the reserves because I got out of the Army in 78 and came down here and finished my master's. Mm-hmm. And I started having problems then, and I could never... I went to reserves. I didn't have good years because I couldn't go on active duty for various reasons. Mm-hmm. So they put me, I'm still in the retired reserve. Mm-hmm. They called me up last March and wanted to know if I would like to go on active duty. I started laughing. I was laughing so hard. And I finally told this lady, I said, ma'am, I'm very sorry. You just don't know how funny this is. And she says, well, you know, you're 30% service connected, and if you're 30% or under, we can call you back. And I said, ma'am, I'm 90% service connected and I can't work anymore because I got all these illnesses. And she goes, whoops. And then she goes, well, would you like to volunteer? We just won't give you a physical. And I said, well, can you guarantee all my medicine can go with me, you know, and that I can get it on a monthly basis? And she said, well, it depends. Should we want to go to Fort Sam and run a clinic? I said, will you sign a paper saying that's what I'm going to do? Well, we can't do that. I said, I know. And I know several people. I said, you know, I think I'd go if I could just find somebody to move in my house and take care of all my cats. Mm-hmm. People are going, you're crazy. And then this lady said, well, you know, you're right. You know, if we sent you overseas and you had a heart attack or something, they'd just send you back and you'd be 100%. I said, yeah, I'd just cost you more money. And I said, but if you want me to go to Fort Sam and be a night supervisor or something. And I said, why aren't you sending all the active duty people over and letting us old fogey reservists cover the hospitals? Mm-hmm. Somebody in our Reserve Officer Association is 79 years old. He's a retired psychiatrist. They called him and asked him if he'd go to Landstuhl, Germany for 6 months. And I told him, tell him you want a nurse. I'm certified in psych now. I said, tell them that you know somebody. I go to Landstuhl for 6 months. That wouldn't bother me, except they don't like Americans now either, so I don't know. That's why I kept extending in the Army. I kept wanting to go to Germany.
Uh-huh. And so you really decided to make this a career and not just get out.
My dad said it's a good deal. Do your 20 years. But then when I started getting sick, I thought that they were pretty much. And then I found out that one of the things was the weight. I was gaining all this weight, and they thought it was thyroid, but they couldn't really figure it out. And at that time, they were rifting people because they had too many people in the Army. That happens after a war. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Army nurses married to helicopter pilots. Mm-hmm. They got rid of all the helicopter pilots, and the nurses figured they'd be next. So what I did, at that time I was only like 10 pounds overweight. So they told me if I didn't lose that 10 pounds, they were going to put me out of the Army. So I didn't, because they had to pay me it had some big fancy word to it, but they had to pay me $15,000. Because it was like something that if you went ahead and got out, and it wasn't a rift kind of thing, that they would give you that money. So I thought, well, heck, with that kind of money, I could put a down payment on a house, pay my tuition for my master's degree, buy the furniture for the house, and have some left over. So that's what I did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Always money. It sounds terrible, doesn't it? It just kind of fell into my lap. Uh-huh. That all I had to do, and that's what I did. Uh-huh. Then I got out, came to San Antonio, got a job at the VA. In fact, I applied for my job in the VA while I was still in the Army. Mm-hmm. Just gave them my evaluation reports. Came down here, and one day, got the job, got the house, flew back up there, and put my separation papers in. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's also this guy that I've been dating on and off for 13 years who was a doctor down here. One year he'd want to get married and I didn't, and vice versa. And he was down here and I'd already been down to visit him, so I kind of had an agenda on that too. So. Mm-hmm. But as it turned out, we didn't get married. I said, first my father tells me what to do, then the Army. You're going to tell me what to do? I don't think so. Mm-mm. Mm-hmm. So that kind of went by the wayside. Uh-huh.
Did you think much, or what did you think about being a woman in the military?
Have you read, what's her name, Mary Powell's book? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm a contributor in there.
Uh-huh.
And when she did the first edition, she put Wendy Wall. And she called me up and told me. I said, that's good. Then nobody will know who it is. The second edition, she has my right name in there. Uh-huh. We met at a VVA breakfast, and we were sharing stories about being women in the military.
Uh-huh.
We were overrun what night? I kept one place before I got to my regular assignment. We were overrun one night, and all they told the girls was to lay on the floor and shut up. Well, the next day at breakfast, this 18-year-old guard, I thanked him on the way to breakfast. You know, I says, geez, I really am glad you were out there guarding us. And he goes, ma'am, I was here to shoot you in case that we couldn't drive them back. And that's in the book.
Uh-huh.
And that's what we were talking about at breakfast. And Mary says, would you put that in the book? I said, oh, yeah, because that's how coddled. I said, I spent all that time at Fort Sam trying to get that stupid clip in the .45 for nothing. I couldn't shoot that anyway, but I could shoot that M16. You ought to try it. It's easy if you get ready for the kick, you know. You can, if you brace yourself, that thing goes like crazy. And I said, you know, they went to all this trouble and they weren't even going to give us weapons. Isn't that stupid? You know, because that was the 60s,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there was several incidences like that where they treated us like little, you know, porcelain dolls or something.
Mm-hmm. Did you think that they wanted you to be a certain type of a nurse or a woman? You know, because you were women, did they want you to be traditional, or did they encourage you to do?
I just remember in Vietnam when I was in the PX once, some guy came up to me and said, oh, you're a girl. I said, yeah, you're American. He said, why don't you wear more weight makeup? It's 120 degrees in here with a metal roof. I just looked at him. I said, do you think I'd sweat better with the makeup on? He says, well, you're supposed to keep up morale.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, sir, I'm patching up the wounded. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Most of the guys were pretty nice,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm sure that, well, we had a lot of secondary agendas. Like, a lot of times the first thing you learned to do was check under your bed before you took your clothes off because you didn't know who might be under there. Some of the guys would follow you around. We went once to China Beach up the road. We had to have 4 guards to go with us. Had a bathing suits under on and fatigues. I didn't know why we needed guards to go to an R&R center. Well, we went to the very end of the beach. The guys were way over there. I got 3 buttons undone and hadn't even gotten my fatigue top off, and they came running. So sometimes I think I was more scared of our soldiers than I was of the enemy. They just wanted to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that some of the older officers would pick up these people. You know, the Red Cross girl next to me made a fortune. In fact, she was telling me she didn't know how to get the money out of the country. And dumb me, I said, why don't you go find a finance officer? That's what she did. Yeah, it was a real eye-opener. But I was pretty naive. I was a straight arrow. I was in the nice girl sorority in college, and I was just totally focused on, yeah, I mean, you hang out with the crowd, but that wasn't anything that I was really. And I know some of the girls really fell in love with some of these married doctors, kind of like MASH. They go off in pairs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really sad because they really got connected over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of too many that actually divorced the wife and then looked up for the girl. And I know one girl got married over there. Well, several. 2 of them I know. And those marriages didn't last very long.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they got stateside. It was a different environment. And the total needs were totally different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people, like my friend that met the guy at Benning, mm-hmm. they stayed together. They're still married.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, but yeah, all the guys, some of these guys were, I mean, you'll hear stories about people hitching a ride, these 2 officers in a Jeep, and you don't see them or hear from them for 2 days. Because they kidnapped them and stuff. Yeah, there was a lot of stuff like that that people didn't really talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You'd hear a little bit about it, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
And I think it depended on your attitude. My attitude, it was very unmistakable. I'm just everybody's sister. I'm one of the guys. Didn't have much problem. I bet that's your next appointment. I think some of these guys actually thought you were like their property, in a way. And I already told you in the club, you know, when I wanted to see the shows, well, that was the only place that was air conditioned when we first got there. So if you wanted to be in air conditioning, you went to the club and the raunchy shows were on. It was really funny that they felt uncomfortable that we were watching. You know, I thought that was really kind of silly. Hey, whatever. And as far as everybody wanted to hit on you, oh, yeah, that was just de rigueur. And we were probably safer than the Vietnamese women. You know, it was possibly more disease-free, I guess, in their eyes. But most of the time, I think that I just had the right signals. I was, you know, pretty young. I was not there to look for men, and I was there to do a job. And then off-duty, yeah, we go different places. But I was just, you know, I don't think I was unapproachable. It's just that it was real unmistakable that was just my thing. And I know there was a lot of girls that were, you know, just falling into that tree. But, oh, man, this is wonderful, you know. And I said, don't you understand, in a way, you're kind of an oddity, like having three heads. And when you go home, you're not going to get all this attention. So it's really kind of I guess I'm just a very common sense person. And I think being a military brat, moving around a lot and having to make friends, and my dad never had us live on the base. We always lived on the economy. We saw an airman hung on a goalpost in Mississippi once. And my dad and the other military people were running to get him down. The KKK came through because I don't know what happened. He was on the wrong side of the... They must have had their little hoods in their cars or something. But my dad, he felt that we were getting an education, going to the public schools and living on the economy. So I think being a military brat, maybe you are more prepared for, or more flexible for situations. And my dad's big thing was when we took vacations, it was all educational. See the world, you know. So... And I don't know, I don't think any of us were really that scared. But compared to today, when one-third of all the units going over are female, it's very, very different. Because my nephew's aircraft maintenance with the first cab, he fixes helicopters, he said third of his unit's female. So it's a very different situation. I do know that at Fort Detrick, I think it was, one of the nurses was married to a school teacher, male school teacher, and they did not want to give her family housing. This was in the 70s, and she was one of the very first test cases. Well, if you're a male nurse and you have a female wife who's a school teacher, you can get what is going on. Then it got to the point where you might have a female nurse that was married to an enlisted guy. So which housing development are you going to live in? You know, the enlisted or officer. It's a lot of stuff that came up like that. Of course, that's fraternization. So that's technically, you know, a law. But... you know, a guy could get a driver's license and drive a Jeep, but not a woman, unless you know, were really pushy. Now, I know a lot of us got little revolvers on the black market, and I had a little .38, but it was not for the enemy. It was for the guys that were breaking in your hooch all the time. So, you know, it was a little different kind of situation. We got on a bus once to go to a party at MAG 16. MAG stands for Marine Air Group. Because our hospital was here, Mucky Mountain was over there, and Marble Mountain was down there, and that's where all the Marine helicopter guys were. So the bus came, they had two senior officers on with us gals, and I remember something happened and the driver got off. I think he had a flat tire or something. And the driver got back on and we weren't paying attention. Well, instead of going to where we were supposed to, we'd been kidnapped. We didn't even know it. Because the guys grabbed the bus driver and put the other guy on there. Well, they had food. We sat there, and the senior officer, I think, called on the field phone. Well, when it was time to leave, some male helicopter pilot says, "Hey, I've got this little dog. You want to see a little dog?" Dummy, "Oh, yeah, let me see the little dog." Well, he locked me in his hooch. And I don't know what he thought he was going to. He picked the wrong person. I wasn't panicked. I was mad. He had all his liquor bottles. I started picking up his liquor bottles one for one and throwing them at him. And you could hear, I hit him a couple of times. And it was a divided room. And you could hear the guys on the other side, "Let her out," whatever his name was, you know. And they finally broke the door in. And what happened is, I had missed the helicopter back, or the bus back. And one of the majors had stayed because they couldn't find me anywhere. And at this point, when they broke the door down, I just ran. Mm-hmm. And I ran into the male officer shower where there was two colonels in there. And I come hiking through, and this one of them grabs me, and they said, I didn't know they were colonels. They had towels on. I said, where are you going? I said, this guy is trying to mug me. I says, what kind of morals do you Marines have anyway? I thought you were true blue or some dumb thing. Uh-huh. And this guy said, and then just as I ran in there, this other guy was chasing me, and I think one of them was trying to bring me back and get me. And they all ran in there, and so here's these colonels sitting there, and oh, those guys were in trouble. Then they had to call our base or our hospital, and they had to send us back in an armed convoy because we got left behind. And I guess, you know, but that's what they did. They kidnapped us, and we didn't even know it. I mean, we weren't paying attention who got on the bus. They had little games like that all the time. Uh-huh. But there's no question in my mind, you know, if this guy kept I would have thrown everything I had at him, and if I found a way, I probably would have shot him. Uh-huh. You know, this is ridiculous. Uh-huh. So I think a lot of times we had more fear of the Americans than we did of the enemy.
Uh-huh. How did all that play into what you thought of the women's movements then in the 60s? Did it make you more... Or what did you think about the women's movement?
I think that I was for equality for everybody. Mm-hmm. Blacks, women, everybody. Now, some of these people that were out burning their bras and getting to be like Gloria Steinem, yeah. Uh-huh. I always wanted to get married and have kids. Uh-huh. I don't think I was as rabid as some people were, but I think uh-huh. it just made me feel like equality is equality. Uh-huh. And there wasn't. There definitely wasn't in the military. Uh-huh. This is a man's world. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would look at you like, ooh, you joined the Army just to be with guys. That's what really infuriates me about those dippy women in the prison that were clerks. The one that was having sex with all these different guys in front of the prisoners, you know, and got pregnant and everything. That just kind of fits the perception of enlisted women in the military to begin with. Mm-hmm. And who needs that? Mm-hmm. I think that those women did more to subtract all the equality that we've worked for all these years mm-hmm. really made me angry.
Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. in terms of kind of social equality, you said there wasn't equality in the military. Was there in professional terms?
Professional terms, I think there was for the most part. Yeah, probably not, because doctors always get more money because mm-hmm. they get bonuses and stuff. But rank and pay, yeah. I mean, you're an O3 with this many years, and this is what you get. Mm-hmm. You know, and there is a more of a collegial kind of thing in the Army, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, with the doctors. Mm-hmm. And that carried over into the VA, too, because mm-hmm. the nurses know what they're doing, and the new graduates don't, and it's a symbiotic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it always seemed, you normally don't think of the military as the place where you get equal rights for women of all groups.
Well,
and it seems
in the beginning
you
didn't.
Pay,
until the 50s, 60s, 70s, it got uh-huh. better when they had the first general in it.
So in terms of you being a man's world, it was...
I think it was equal at least for pay and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It's very situational. I think it depended on who you were working with and where. Mm-hmm. And the commander setting the tone of the installation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it could just be a personal thing, isn't it? More than
right.
Know,
I think in this day and age, you see a heck of a lot more women doctors than you ever did then.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think it's all situational, really.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as being coddled in a war zone, oh brother.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure a lot of people took advantage of that and uh-huh. got away with things they wouldn't normally get away with.
Yeah. Wow, it's interesting. Was there anything that we didn't talk about that you thought we would or that you wanted to talk about?
I don't think so. Other than, you know, having inexperienced nurses looking at the sheer severity of the wounds, mm-hmm. and that was kind of a shocking thing in itself. I can tell you personally, I worked that year of surgery. I've never worked surgery again,
mm-hmm.
and I never will.
Uh-huh.
Ever. I don't. You show me stitches and I just go, oh God, I don't want to see that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that you made a big impression on me, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to do that again. Mm-hmm. I stayed with, like, you know, hearts, lungs, you know, still pretty gross, but you're not mm-hmm. seeing frag wounds and bullet wounds and burns and stuff.
Uh-huh. Great, well, I really appreciate it. It's very helpful.
We have to. Well, right now, since I retired 2 years ago, I thought I was going to go crazy. But I joined a bunch of organizations. And one of the things in this Military Order of the World Wars that I joined in 1975, because my dad joined in 1941, and he says, let's do this. Never went to a meeting until I retired. They run a youth leadership conference every year that's patterned after the ones at Valley Forge. Mm-hmm. We also give out ROTC medals to the different ROTC units. And all the other organizations do, too. So this is my third year. And I've noticed they're all men. I am the only woman in a military uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And half of these cadets now are female. In fact, they have the really good positions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important for the women to be participants.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's good for these kids in this day and age to be role models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're probably going to talk. Well, you mean a lot of people just did their 2 years, mm-hmm. and some people just totally turned their back on nursing and never did that again.
Yeah.
So I figured I had all that knowledge. I wasn't going to waste it.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's about it.
Okay, great. Well, we'll end the interview.